because your sin is unforgiven. Christian men and women in the frailty of the flesh sometimes at the end shrink from death because of its mystery. Yet they look into the face of the rider on the pale horse, and with the dignity of an assured victory they say, O death, O grave, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting? Oh, we all as preachers, when we come to preach a funeral, the word is equally true. I've had loved ones pass. I don't think I'll ever forget the human experience of being on that jet, Doc Star One, flying home from Louisville, hoping for the best, but feeling sure it was not the case, finding out when we landed at the fuel stop that Dad indeed had passed on. Making sure no one else would tell my mother but me, though in her heart of hearts she knew also. Feeling the anguish of personal loss, but the certain joy that my dad got on that ship, just started his journey. I'm sure singing, He Set Me Free, as he went across the plank. I preached a lot of funerals I couldn't be that sure about. I'm one that will preach suicides, because I don't think we know what happens in the heart and soul of man when they breathe that last breath down here and take that first breath of eternity. We all want our loved ones. We want God to accept them because we love them. We all want... And any time I preach, unlike those fundamentalists that will not preach a suicide because they say it's self-murder, and thus he went to God a murderer, we don't know what goes on in the heart and mind of a man that is the causal force. So I'll preach suicides, and they're in the hands of God. I mean, the thief on the cross made it in the last minute. But I know it's so much better to be sure. Because just a lot of good people are going to die and face the great and awful judgment of God. Because they put themselves first and didn't fall on that stone and be broken pieces. They rejected Christ and offered something else. The sting of death is sin. If we don't like the preacher to speak of death, it's because sin is not dealt with in our experience. All of you are going to face death of loved ones, maybe yourself, in this coming year. The sting of death is sin. And if we do not like the preacher to speak of death, it's because sin is not dealt with in our experience. We ought to look on toward the last day. Let's honestly face it. Presently, these turning wheels of time will bring us to the end. 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And then we enter eternity, where these turning wheels of life have brought us, where burdens are laid down. These turning wheels will bring us to the confines crossing over which we go out into what has been spoken of as that bourne from which no traveler returns. In view of that day, and in view of the fact of the spiritual nature of man, how are we resting? This same message was given by Isaiah, and they mocked him, showed contempt for it. mentally flipped him off. On what have we attempted to lay down our humanity, or what are we trying to lay it down on now? Our humanity, our soul, our personality. And would we be affrighted with the knowledge we have if that day came suddenly tonight? I talked to men and women individually. Morgan says, and I find their answers to these questions are very different. One man says, I have no fear of God or of the end or the future because my life has always been a moral, good life. That man's making a bed for himself of his own morality. Another man says, I have no fear of the future because I'm a Christian by all the rites and ceremonies of Christianity. I was that fool, I heard you, Scott, and I'm going back to it again. All the religious observances on the part of my parents and on my part. That person is making a bed of external religious observance. I find another man who says, well, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I yielded myself to Jesus Christ and it's all right. I was baptized. I gave my life to God. That man's making a bed of worn-out experience. I come to yet another man, he says, I have no fear, God's a God of love. And God will never punish me or let me suffer for my sin. That man's making a bed of a false doctrine of God, utterly unwarranted by the revelation which he has made of himself to men. As this prophecy of judgment shows. Another man put me aside when I attempted to speak to him, saying, oh, don't talk to me. I know these things are important, but I have no time for them yet. Other things to do. That man is resting his soul on the unspoken conviction that there is time yet to be when business will not press and pleasure will not allure and wants will not need to be fulfilled, and he will have inclination then to deal with the things spiritual and eternal and with God. Things I can do now, can't do later. I'll get to God later. These are but samples. I say to you, in the presence of every one of them and of all similar ones, first, the bed is shorter than that a man can stretch himself on it. I like its shorter version. The bed's too short. And second, the covering is too narrow. In other words, none of these things brings perfect rest to the soul of man. None of these things will be sufficient to enwrap and hide him in that awful day of wrath which must break forth against all willful disobedience and rebellion and sin. I say in the first place, these things do not constitute beds on which men can rest. Take the man who says he's had no fear of God or the future because he's been a good and moral man. What about it? After the station break, get on telephone. You know, probably not, and don't take any more calls, not since G. Campbell Morgan preached in Westminster Chapel have his messages been presented, except in print, as we're presenting them here. As I've said many times, at least 8 out of 10 evangelical preachers in America, if you get in their library, you'll find G. Campbell Morgan's Westminster pulpit there. So his messages have been plagiarized and ruined, occasionally improved, by voices all over America, but just read, and it's being done with the whole world listening. And you know, the last event in eternity is the judgment seat of Christ, where rewards are passed out. We don't all get the same place in heaven. We don't all get the same reward. You can have your cab in the corner of Gloryland if you want it. Let me tell you, if that's all you want, you ain't getting in. But there are differences. Eternity is not just a bunch of cloned angels sitting on a cloud getting bed sores throughout eternity. There's a judgment seat of Christ because rewards accrue to the last minute. I'll get some rewards for this message of lives that are touched, you who support this ministry. But G. Campbell Morgan's getting some more now. As his words go around the world, these things do not constitute beds on which men can rest. Take the man who says he has no fear of God and of the future because he's been a good and moral man. Well, what is morality? Well, what I think it is. What I feel good about doing. Morality demands a standard. What is your standard by which you judge yourself as good and okay? It would be ludicrous if it were not tragic to hear the answers the human beings would give to that inquiry. One man says, I've always paid my way. I've never defrauded anyone or harmed anyone. These things are advanced as though they were of the essence of morality. We see at once what is the standard of that man's morality. It's the policeman. The cop on the beat. That's his standard of morality. Here's a man in the image of God with the very stamp and likeness of divinity on his brow, and yet he talks as though everything that the universe can ask of him and God Almighty demand to him is that he escape the clutch of a human policeman, and that's supposed to be morality. Morality must have a standard. And the standard of true morality must come as a revelation from him who is God. How are you going to get this revelation? He spoke to us. He's given us a standard of morality. I do not choose for the moment to find it in the words of Jesus. So that's the ultimate and fullest expression. I go back rather behind that even, to the 10 words written by the finger of God long ago for the government of human life. And I ask, does our morality bear the test of that high standard? You're not going to take Christ. You're going to be judged by the standard of the law. When men consent to measure their morality by that standard, they too often begin among the things of secondary importance. Like, don't steal, and don't commit adultery. What is the first word? The fundamental word of morality, if you're looking for a standard. Jesus' answer pointed that out to the rich young ruler. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. You know, self can be a god. The cruelest god of all. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Loved ones can be a god. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Children, wife, husband. It's amazing as we go along how other gods can move in. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. Well, I want to share it with this, God. No, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. That's morality. The man who is simply moral enough to escape imprisonment, moral enough to maintain the respect of the crowd of people that live around him because he's never harmed them, is immoral. Unless his life is crowned with worship, unless he realizes the highest thing in his being as his soul goes out in love and adoration, must focus on the God of all. I don't care what you're doing. You know whether or not God is first. or whether some other God. And we know it. There are moments when the consciousness surges upon us. There are moments when the whispering of the other world, eternity that is, rings through our souls, these moments of truth. Every one of you have had it at some time. When an infinite light such as never was on land or sea flashes on our consciousness, and we're stopped in some foolish path. Somewhere in the silence of the night and the loneliness of the mountain, somewhere amid the mere tragic loneliness of the crowded city, God breaks in upon our souls and we think of the infinite distances and spaces and eternities and tremble. Yes, the bed's too short for us to stretch on, and our souls find no rest on any morality in which we've made our boast. Some there are who trust in religious observances. I find persons who say, I was baptized in my infancy. I was confirmed when I came to a certain age. I have regularly attended the sacrament. Therefore, I'm a Christian. By no means, therefore. To begin with, spiritual life is never generated by material action. The life of God is not communicated by the sprinkling of the water, nor could it be. That's a lie, of all lies the most dastardly, that tells a child that in baptism it was made the child of God, an inheritor of the kingdom of heaven. We dare not, even at the risk of uttering things that sound controversial, consent to say nothing about that lie. Thousands of souls are deluded by it. They're led to think of themselves as Christians because the church did something for them, and yet the Christ life has never touched them, and they're devoid of love for God and the love of God. The warrant of my assertion is not formulated creed, but the scriptures of truth. The revelation of God in which it is said to men, not you must be baptized into life by water, either more or less, but you must be born again. Any man who puts his trust in any ceremony such as this finds a bed on which he cannot stretch and finds no perfect and positive rest. God's life has to come in you, not some external religious, almost said what it is, stuff. I left Morgan there for a minute. I have known men and women who most surely on this day of confirmation, when they were confirmed, were born again. And some of you when you were baptized or some other experience when the truth in that moment hit you. What did you promise on that day of confirmation or other days when you've made commitments to God? You took upon yourself vows that others, alas, in their folly, had taken upon themselves and never fulfilled. You're going to be one of them too? What did you promise? Did you mean it? At that moment when a commitment was made to God, which by its very definition means to renounce the world, the flesh, and the devil. When you recognize the rescue and who the true enemy was, from whose hands God's grace redeemed you and His power lifted you, what did you promise? Did you mean it? Did you do it? If you did, that was repentance. And if in doing it you yielded to Christ, then and there you were born again. But did you do it? Are you doing it now? Renouncing the world? If you were of the world would love its own. But you're not of the world because I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Hasn't happened to me in so long, but I got a fresh recognition again as recent as last night when I came out of a restaurant and a drunken idiot began screaming obscenities at me, calling me reverend.
This is the end of side 3. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side 4.